Shall we start?
Yes.
Wow, I'm so excited for this episode.
Wow, what a nice intro.
We have a guest on here today. His name is Kevin. Not the typical Kevin Nguyen, but Kevin Chang.
Thank you, Summer.
Yeah, so today, Kevin is here to talk to us about, you know, his experiences and kind of our experiences in cultural clubs at LMU. But before we start, let's do a check-in. How are you all doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Recently, I saw some of my friends actually in the Bay Area. Like, I saw Summer. I saw, like, one of our friends. His name is Colin.
Colin doesn't listen to the podcast.
I did tell him to. I told him that his roommate was on one time. So I did tell him to listen. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And he said he's down to come on.
Yeah, he is down to come on.
He's down to come on, but he doesn't listen. Fake. I'm just kidding. That's cool. How about you, Summer?
Yeah, I think it was pretty good last week. Like, I feel like it was like the most that I've gone out within a whole week in like a year. You know, like I went out actually like 3 times last week. And yeah, and I got to see Kevin and Colin and Rogers yesterday. We got really good food on Saturday. We went to this dessert place. It's called You Dessert. Oh, it's the one that we were going to go to, Crystal. But then we didn't. But it was really good.
Ooh,
it was really good. Wow. We had bingsu there.
Mm.
They have vegan bingsu, but then it doesn't like taste any less than like a regular bingsu, I feel like.
Mm. Yeah, that's really good.
So good.
Wow.
Yeah, and then yesterday we went to Mission Dolores Park. And we ate burrito and a Gucci board. Well, we didn't actually have the board, but we have everything on it.
Yeah, Colin forgot to bring the board itself. But he brought all the cheeses.
Wow.
Yeah. It was really nice. Yeah.
Aw.
How about you, Crystal?
I've been good. I've been busy too, like socializing. Like you said, I haven't socialized with this many people in a while.
Yeah.
And yeah, we had people over like a few times in the past 2 weeks, and it was really fun, like hosting people here. Yeah, like Martin came over, and then we saw Austin and Donovan came like a few weeks ago, like Dion and them came. It was really fun. So yeah, but then I'm like pretty drained from socializing. I didn't even realize it. So
honestly,
we're just chilling. Yeah. And yeah, it's been nice. And then graduation is like coming up, so I'm like drained, but then I'm like, oh no, gotta prepare for socializing again. I'm kind of worried about it though because of Delta, but we'll see. So I've been talking to like my parents about
it. I'm kind of worried
too.
Like,
they were like, don't go, and I was like, I don't know, because all my extended family isn't going anymore, which is fair. Like, I'm totally fine. Like, also, I don't really care about it anymore. Like, I feel like for my class, it's kind of like, we're just seeing friends again. But for you guys, it's like actual graduation. But I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, to be honest, I feel like it's like, I have the same thoughts as you, Crystal, because like our names aren't being read off and it's like everyone, right? So I feel like for me too, I think the main value that I'm getting out of graduation is just, it's like seeing everyone again for once.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So is it worth it to go to the ceremony or just go
like
see
I think
them?
I
yeah I'm like kind of over with how long the ceremony is gonna
it's
like the
long.
Actual ceremony is not gonna be that long, but then like with the preparation we have to get there like really early in
like
the morning.
10
yeah, 9 or 10
we shall see.
So exciting though.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're gonna start with this week this or that. And is Hong Kong milk tea versus regular milk tea.
Ooh.
So to give you all like some background, so what's special about Hong Kong milk tea is instead of using fresh milk, people usually use evaporated milk or condensed milk to make it more creamy. And the portion of tea and milk is around 7 to 3, which is why like Hong Kong milk tea is usually more bitter and you can taste the tea more than regular milk tea. And like regular milk tea usually just like mixed with fresh milk or non-dairy creamer. So the tea flavor is not as strong as Hong Kong milk tea.
Okay, I definitely gotta say I like Hong Kong milk tea better. I do love boba, like regular boba, but like for me, like the main draw of like boba is like tasting the tea, and I think Hong Kong milk tea does a lot better. Just because in general too, I feel like in America at least, a lot of like milk tea is kind of too sweet. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoy having like a taste of the Hong Kong milk tea.
Mm-hmm. Fair. That's a hard question. I don't know. Every time I have Hong Kong milk tea in Hong Kong, I think because of the condensed milk, it makes me poop. Like, it makes my stomach hurt. But that hasn't happened to the Hong Kong milk tea I've tried here in the U.S. And whenever I get, like, boba, I never get, like, milk tea. I always get, like, green tea or, like...
Me too.
Like, matcha or something. I never get, like, milk tea. And it is too sweet. But then I really like boba. Like, I've tried so many, like, different boba places here in, like, San Gabriel, Alhambra area. And, yes, I have Rex. But I don't know. I think probably Hong Kong milk tea. Because I don't really drink, like, milk tea.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'll pick Hong Kong milk tea, too. Because wow. Just like you, like, I don't usually, like, drink regular milk tea when I go to like a boba shop unless I'm like really craving for it, and even so, like, I'll pick milk tea that has like a stronger tea flavor, like roasted oolong milk tea. But I feel like what makes Hong Kong milk tea very special is one, the taste of the tea, but also how like smooth it is. Like, if you actually go to like an authentic like Hong Kong milk tea place, they use the silk stocking. Yeah, I don't know how to do it. They like pull the milk to like filter, and stuff, filter, and then there's like they make the milk a lot smoother, and I really like the taste of the tea in Hong Kong milk tea. So I think I'll pick that.
Wow, first time everyone chose the same answer.
I know. I think. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Shall we move on to Kevin's introduction?
Yeah. So should I just, like, tell the audience a bit about myself?
Yeah. Anything you would like to share.
Okay, sure. So, my name's Kevin Chang. I guess, like, I was actually born in the Bay Area. Like, I was actually born in San Jose. But then my family moved up to, like, north of Sacramento. Like, about, like, half an hour north of Sacramento. That's where I was for, like, most of my life. Then for college, I went down to LMU. Where I met Crystal in summer.
And your life changed ever since.
Oh my god. Do you know why your family moved up to Sac?
Just because, like, I think it's definitely, like, a slower life than the Bay Area. Like, it's much less crowded. And also my dad had a job offering in this area, so that's why they moved.
Fair.
Yeah. And can you tell me more about, like, your family background?
Oh yeah, sure. So in general, even when I meet like other like people that are Asian, I just kind of say, "Oh, I'm Chinese," because it's like simpler. But also, like, my family background is like kind of like they went to like a lot of places. My dad, I think, his family is from Taiwan, but then he moved at a pretty early age to Thailand, and then he moved from Thailand to the U.S. like during college.
Okay.
And then like my mom, I think her family is from Guangdong, but then they moved to Hong Kong, and from Hong Kong they then moved to the U.S. Like, I think, but she moved pretty early. She moved when she was, like, 7, though.
Oh, wow.
That's really cool how, like, you know, like, your parents came from, like, totally different countries, and then at the end, they just met each other in America. What are the odds?
Yeah, that's nice.
So romantic. Yes. Yeah, so.
How did you and you both meet in college? Do you remember?
Oh. With Summer,
Well, with Summer, I feel like I met Kevin through, like, Han Tao, for sure, but...
Yeah. Honestly, I think I just met Summer through Han Tao.
Yeah. Do you remember the first interaction?
Yeah.
I don't.
Oh!
Honestly, I don't.
I think, like...
Because, like, I wasn't, like, super involved in Han Tao at first, so I probably, like, just, like, met Summer just, like, randomly sometime during our freshman year, but then, obviously, like, I think it got, like, a lot closer... during my sophomore year.
Yeah. Wait, I want to, like, yeah, I have a story to tell, though. So I think, like, majority of my freshman year, I didn't really know Kevin that well. Like, maybe I've seen you in, like, general meeting.
Oh, I know the story.
But then I remember at the end of the year we had Hantou election, and this dude ran for Kojo coordinator, which is the position that I also ran for, right?
No, I thought it was secretary, wasn't it?
Was it secretary?
I think I went against like Ray.
Oh, okay.
Ray Law, one of our other friends.
Yeah, sorry. Anyways, and then I was like, who is this guy who's trying to get on Hantou e-board? I've never seen this guy before.
Oh my god, yep. That's so funny.
That was like my first, like, not like first impression, but like my first memory of like our interaction, yeah. I guess.
Oh,
that's how I know about like Kevin Chang.
Oh,
yeah, but then we got a lot closer, and I think like in my senior year, I'm really grateful to be on e-board with Kevin, and we had the same class.
Yeah, as am I.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're both so old now.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about that yesterday. Oh. Like, all of us, like, because, like, all of us that, like, met up, like, graduated from college, and we're like, wow. Like, we're, like, counting, like, every birthday we've had, and it, like, seems so weird, because we're now no longer, like, even, like, under 21.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's just funny, because I just remember Kevin as a very ecstatic person, especially, like, in meetings and stuff when I would talk to you. It's just so funny all the time. And you're always so, like, welcoming.
Aww.
But, yeah, all wholesome. Wholesome memories.
Aw, that's nice to hear.
All right, so into the juicy part of our episode.
Scroll the tea.
So we want to know more about, like, how was life like growing up in Brooklyn, which is a predominantly white area, and how does it affect your identity as an Asian American?
Yeah, so this is kind of a funny topic, because I feel like if any listeners today are from Rockland, they might have like a different opinion, because I think over time it has become like more diverse, but not by a lot. It's like nothing like what you would see in like the Bay or like LA. But like when I first came to like Rockland, like I was like 7 years old, and I was like what, and like actually I was like five. I think I was like 4 or 5 years old. So I was like, I think it was like 2004 when I came to Rockland. And so in Rockland, back then it was very like not diverse. Like I think in my like preschool, I was the only person of color in like the entire like school basically. And so I think like in Rockland, you just have a very like skewed perception of like your Asian identity, because I feel like people in like the Bay or LA, I feel like they have, like, a better sense of who they are, and also just, like, more pride in general in, like, being Asian, because I don't want to, like, you know, roast anyone from my hometown, but I feel like a lot of Asians in general from my place either, like, don't like being Asian, and they try very hard to fit in to be white, or they kind of go the other way, where they, like, are really, like, hardcore, like, Asian, like, oh, I'm Asian, and, like, you know, everyone else kind of sucks.
Mm.
So just, I just, like, I mean, like, I know there are benefits to living here. Like, for example, like, schooling is not as competitive, and the pace of life is just, like, you know, slower, which some people like. But I feel like if you're a young Asian person, it's very hard to, like, have a real sense of who you are and just, like, have a good, like, sense of, like, being, like, happy in yourself. I do really think that LMU and just meeting other people there made me a lot more secure and happy in who I am.
Aww. Were you in the Bay before? Like, you were in San Jose before when you were 4?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because, like, my parents, they were there for, like you know, the tech jobs, right? Mm. So, but then they over time, they, like, moved over here to Rockland.
Do you remember the difference of, like, people that you saw? I mean, you were, like, 4. You were really young. But did you, like, process that, like, stark difference in, like, diversity?
I think, like, I did, especially, like, when I moved up to, like, Rockland, like, even at, like, that age, you can kind of, like, tell that you're, like, you're different than everyone else, right? That, like, you know, your family looks different, and that you look kind of different from everyone else around you.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, because, like, you know, I was just, like, playing the sandbox, right? Like, as a kid, you know, I was, like, you know, like, very innocent, right, as we all are, but I feel like you still, like, know weirdly enough, or at least that was me. Like, I kind of, like, knew from, like, I was, like, 4 or 5, that I was, like, different.
Mm-hmm.
Was there, like, a moment when you really just realized, well, like, I'm so different from other people? Like, I know a lot of, like, Asian Americans, they always have that, like, lunchbox story, you know? Was that a moment like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that really, like, I know it's kind of weird, but, like, it, like, stands out to me is that I went over to, like, my white friend's house, right? And, like, I took off my shoes by the front door, and I think, like, my friend's parents were confused because, like, a lot of white families just, like, you know, like, wear shoes inside the house.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, that family too was like pretty religious, and so like they were just like they had like a lot of iconography in their house, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of pertaining to religion, and I just kind of felt like that was like that kind of showed how different it was, because our area is pretty like very religious as well, and I am not, so.
So then you went to like first grade to high school. In SAC. How was that experience? Like, were you like one of the only Asians there, or how was the diversity in school?
I think by the time I went to elementary school, there was like a few Asians in my school. I remember there was like one other Chinese dude in my grade, but it was kind of bad because I remember like all the teachers would like get our names wrong. Like they would miss it. Like there's like two of us, right? And like they would still like call me by the other guy's
name.
Oh
my god.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, like, I don't know, I feel like even then, like, I kind of gravitated towards other Asians. Mm-hmm. At lunch, I'd always, like, just, like, sit with the other guy. Or some other minorities, because I feel like, in, like, Brooklyn, like, a lot of the minorities, even if they're, like, not, like, you know, same, like, type of race, like, Asian, or some other race, they kind of stick together, because, like, mainstream American culture are kind of, like, off-putting if you're a minority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you remember... Or did you get treated differently at school? Or did, like, teachers, like, look at you as, like, the model minority or anything like that?
Oh, so I feel like back when I was, like, that little, I couldn't, like, quite tell. Like, I wasn't, like, you know, obviously, like, mature enough to, like, understand these kind of things. But I feel like teachers expected us to, like, do well, basically just because we were Asian. I remember, so actually I'm pretty bad at math. But I feel like, teachers, like, still, like, I was, like, really good at it. And I was, like, placed, like, in the advanced math courses, even though I didn't really understand what was going on.
Oh, my God.
What? Yeah. Like, I remember one time I was, like, she was, like, why don't you try it for a math Olympiad? And so I did, but I was, like, too bad at math to, like, stay on the team.
Oh, my gosh. I did that when I was younger, too. Math Olympiad. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's wild how, like, they don't really look at the actual thing that's right in front of you.
Yeah.
But, yeah, wow. That's a lot.
Do you also, like, realize if, like, they will treat you differently than other people of color, other minority groups?
Oh, yeah. I remember in high school, I feel like the Asians, like, generally went under, like, the disciplinary radar of the school. But I remember in high school, there were a few African-American students. And to be honest, I felt pretty bad for them because, like, definitely you could tell the school, like, admins like didn't like them. I remember like one time like some of the African American students got into like altercation. You know, it's like a mini like high school fight, you know, they happen. But the school admins were like pretty strict on them. Like in terms of like how they like would discipline them and stuff. And like I don't know, like that's definitely off putting. Cause I don't know, like a lot of those students left my high school over time.
Was most of the admin white also?
Oh, they're all white. I think all the teachers are white too, except for teachers of like foreign languages.
Yikes. I think that was my high school too, though, to be honest.
Yeah.
They were all white.
How was that, like, experience, Crystal, when all the faculties are white?
Oh, I didn't really pay much attention to, I don't know, I feel like when I came here for high school, I didn't really care. Like I cared about grades and stuff, but that was all I really cared about, like, getting good grades and getting into college. Like, I didn't really care about, like, the social dynamics around me. I had like a friend also from Hong Kong who moved like the same year that I did, which is wild. So I didn't know her prior. I did know her prior, but we weren't like friends. So I just stuck with her. Like we just stuck together throughout school. And my school had a lot of other Asian students as well. So I would say my school is pretty diverse, but in terms of staff and teachers, like there was definitely no diversity. I don't think I was ever treated like differently in a bad or a good way because there were so many other Asians in my school. But definitely, like, the teachers who were white, I don't think this is, like, a because they're white thing, but just, like, teachers in LAUSD is just kind of not the best. So I just reflect back on how shitty, like, the teachers were and how shitty, like, the counselors were. But I don't think I experienced any microaggressions, or maybe I just don't know.
Yeah, I think, like, sometimes for me, too, it's, like, you don't always recognize it. Especially like if you like aren't like introduced to the term before.
Yeah.
So I feel like some things like went under my radar, like I didn't like quite recognize until later. I remember like I actually got called Jackie Chan on my soccer team. I don't know, like I guess because like I like to be a little flashy, so I play soccer. So like my like coach was like, oh, it's like Jackie Chan, and that kind of stuck. And I didn't really recognize. Oh. I didn't really recognize that was like kind of bad until I went to college. Like I remember I was like telling a story to like some of my other friends as like a joke, right? Like, oh, how funny! They're trying to be like, oh, like this is like kind of funny, right? My friends were like kind of horrified. They're like, that's not not good. It's kind of racist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard for us to like know what it, I honestly didn't learn much about recognizing racism until college. It like it's always leaves a bad taste in your mouth, but you're like, I can't pinpoint, like, is that problematic?
Yeah,
because like I remember the first experience that I had with racism, not necessarily to me but like people around me, was when I moved here, and then my mom got a speeding ticket once, and then we brought it up to my cousin who's I think we brought it up to my cousin's husband who's white. And he was saying, like, oh, yeah, just do this and this and you can get out of it. So I guess he'd gotten out of a lot of parking tickets with police officers before, or speeding tickets. But that was, like, to me, I was like, I don't think that would apply to us. And that was the first, like, moment I was like, oh, they treat people of color differently. But then I couldn't, like, really register, like, the reason behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember, like, even when, so I think I learned a lot about, like, racism in my senior year of high school. I was very fortunate to be, like, in a program. But I remember when I first moved here, you know, I was not introduced to the idea of, like, model minority. And then I remember when I first got into the high school, I met with my counselor. And then, like, I was, like, talking to her. And then the first thing that she said was, oh, like, your English is really good. Like, back then, I really didn't know, like, that could be, like, a microaggression. But I just felt good that I took it as a compliment. And I feel like there are, at the beginning, like, there are a lot of instances where people, like, just said that, like, oh, like, your English really good. And I really took pride into it, but not really understanding the implication behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think even till this day, people still say that to me, but mostly like older people, like people's parents and stuff.
Yeah.
That I'm like, oh, I'm from Hong Kong. And they're like, oh, wow, your English is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like kind of weird. Cause like, I remember like my mom, she like learned English too back in like Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. So like, it was like, it's like weird because I feel like in Hong Kong, especially like English is spoken like so much. It's like, it's really like natural to use it.
It's one of the official languages, I think.
Yeah.
English and Cantonese, so
yeah,
I just say that when someone like says that to me, I'm like, oh, actually English is one of Hong Kong's official languages and we have to learn it in school.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so when you came to college, Kevin, how did your perception of your Asian American identity change?
Oh, it changed a lot. I should put up like an entire essay for this for grad school.
Yes.
Oh,
because a lot of grad schools nowadays will ask you kind of like about diversity, right? So I've actually talked to, quite a bit about that in my essays. And so I guess I had pretty like preconceived notions of like what being Asian was, and that mostly pertained to like studying and stuff, right? Like being very like academic and like just like, you know, like getting like really high grades, I guess. But in college, I learned these terms called ABB and ABG. And so, for listeners who might not know what these terms are, ABB means Asian baby boy, and ABG means Asian baby girl. And so, for me, it was a very, like, novel idea to, like, see other Asians, just, like, not as, like, nerds, basically, but, like, kind of, like, as, like, more outgoing, or as people that would, like, I don't know, they're just, like, more open, and had a very different, like, persona to, like, I guess, like, traditional stereotypes of Asians.
Mm-hmm.
I remember you telling me that you see Justin Fang as, like, an idol, because Justin Fang, who is our friend, like, in his freshman year, I think, even until now, I think he's still, like, buffing. He's, like, this really, like, buff Asian dude who's always at the gym working out. Yeah, not like, your typical Asian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like just like didn't register at me beforehand that Asians could like be like that. You know what I mean?
True.
Because there are like so few Asians where I live. I had a very like skewed perception of like what Asianness was.
That's so true, and I feel like though now like that we've been exposed to like ABGs and ABBs are like wasn't a term when I got into college. I feel like it like. Came really recently. I'm not sure when.
Yeah.
No, I feel like it has been around for like a couple of years, for like a while.
Okay, maybe because like
we're just not exposed to it.
Like dress or like act like ABGs when you're in high school or something. And like I really only got exposed to it in college. But then I keep seeing TikToks about people posting like, oh, I'm Asian, but I'm not this kind of Asian. And they would post pictures of like ABGs and stuff. And it's like kind of not like good in terms of like beauty standards too. I feel like that's, it's a new level of beauty standards. Because I feel like beauty standards traditionally is like, what's the word? Like timid, like for women at least, like timid.
Very cute.
Like polite. Cutesy. Yeah. But then ABG is like a whole different.
Like opposite of the switch, spectrum, but then, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. But now that I feel like that's like one of the beauty standards as well that people categorize.
Yeah.
When they think of like beauty standards. So I just keep seeing those TikToks and it makes me sad.
Yeah, I feel like. So I actually did a research about like ABG when I was like working on the Hantau project. And I just feel like. Even though it's good that, you know, like, ABG kind of broke out of the stereotypes that Asian women are, like, you know, timid and all that stuff. But at the same time, it also put, like, Asian women in, like, another box. Like, you either have to fit into, like, the really cutesy, timid box, or you fit into, like, the ABG box. But what is, like, everything in between? I'm pretty sure I don't fit into, like, either. I'm like kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like that can be very toxic too. And also like a lot of the features of being an ABG is very Eurocentric. Like you have what? Colored lenses? Pupils?
Yeah.
Yeah. They wear like lenses.
Contact lenses?
Oh, contact lenses. Yeah. And then they like usually have blonde hair, you know? And
yeah.
Very long lashes.
Mm-hmm. ABB2, right? I don't know what the
chain
it entails.
It's the chain and the tattoo.
Chains, like earrings.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I feel like ABG is more like, I don't know, K-pop star?
I feel like it's like more like loose. It's like, honestly, it's like more intertwined with like, I guess like modern, like urban, like fashion for guys.
Yeah.
I feel like it's like not as distinctive, I guess.
Yeah.
As ABGs.
Is it more like soft boy?
Oh no, it's not soft boy. It's kind of the opposite. Okay. It's definitely the opposite spectrum of soft boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know like now especially a lot of like soft boy looks are coming back. Yeah. I feel like because of K-pop.
Yeah.
And I feel like opposite of ABG, it like demasculinizes. Like a demasculine.
Yeah.
Makes someone more and less masculine.
Yeah, but I feel like that's kind of like a U.S. thing. I feel like in Korea, like definitely the beauty standards for guys is a lot different.
Yeah,
like it is. Me, yeah. Always,
so like in Korea, I feel like it'd be like just like normal in a way, but I'm not sure about that. But in America, I guess.
Yeah.
America definitely be like less masculine.
Yeah, in Korea, like I feel like it's you can be less masculine, but only if you do it in this way. Like only if you have certain features.
True.
Yeah. I always find it funny. Like body hair in like Korea, because I've heard that like they're like products for guys to like remove body hair, right?
Oh, in Korea,
but, like, yeah, but okay, I could be wrong because I'm not an expert in like Korean culture. But then in America, on the other hand, America, you know, body hair is very much like a sign of like masculinity,
yeah,
right?
Like if you remember that like one like SpongeBob movie,
no,
like do you watch that?
No,
like basically, no. Like I think one of the characters like puts like a seaweed. On like SpongeBob's like under his nose. And since like SpongeBob thinks it's like facial hair, he's like, oh wow, I'm a man now. I can do this.
Oh my god.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if it's more prominent in like I feel like every culture like has those kinds of stereotypes on men too. You know, they want you to be more masculine.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting.
But I think that's kinda like why a lot of Asian like guys at least like feel like very not masculine in America because like that like particular like beauty standard because you know like I mean I'm kind of different but
you're very hairy Kevin.
Yeah, I'm very hairy. It's pretty rare for an Asian, but like obviously in general like most Asian guys are not very hairy, and since that's such like a reinforced like beauty standard in America, I feel like that's what makes them feel like unmasculine. And I feel like ABB in a way is a way to kind of like regain or like have like a better or have like more agency in your identity, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, we went on a tangent again. That's okay. Yeah, that's okay. Okay, so you said you saw ABGs and ABBs once you came to college.
Well, not just that, but just like, for like Asians that had different ambitions too, because the very few Asians that were like in my area, it was like all like STEM, like medicine or like CS or like engineering or something like that. And so it was like, it's nice about LMU is that, like, I feel like, obviously, like, you know, I'm in STEM, other Asian STEM too, but I feel like there are a lot of other people there that mm-hmm. had different, like, ambitions and goals, like, especially creatives, because, like, for me, at least, like, going down a creative route is, like, basically forbidden by my parents. So it was just, like, it was nice just to see, like, other Asians that were in the creative field, because I think, just in general, it, like, broadened my mind as to what, like, an Asian could be.
Mm-hmm. True.
And I feel like, also another thing about, you know, joining Hantao, like a Chinese American club at LMU, is that I just love to share like our culture together. You know, I feel like even though like we're just like getting boba, going to dim sum, but then the fact that we all like enjoy it and, you know, like we are making memories together is also something that really solidified my Asian American identity. And even like during meetings, we always just talk about, you know, like different Chinese festivals, celebrations and stuff. And I think like it makes me feel prouder of my Asian American identity. And it's something to be celebrated.
Yeah, it definitely gives you a space to like reflect and share. Cause I remember the first Hantao retreat I went to, like, my freshman year, like, there was one part where we all just sat, like, reflection groups or something, and we were all just, like, sharing our stories, and I was like, this is so cool. And I don't think I've ever found, like, community like that, like, anywhere since I've come to the U.S. So, yeah, it's a really nice feeling to know people know your experience, but also know that everyone's experience is different. And I feel like because I wasn't like technically Asian American, like I feel like my experience isn't the Asian American experience. It helped me learn about that too. And I feel like now my experience is more similar to Asian American experience. And literally most of my friends are Asian American. So yeah, I think it really had a huge impact on me, like thinking back to my first retreat. And I don't think, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's like one of the most like impactful moments that I have in throughout my 4 years of college. It's like through those discussions, and I think like in general also like Hantao does a really good job at like creating a really safe space. And when you're in that moment, you just like, I feel like you just get a feeling that like you can be vulnerable and like everyone can share their story and be respected at the same time.
Yeah, you want to be. I feel like college is really good at doing that. There's all these different like retreats and all these different things. Like I feel like now when I think about it, having graduated, I'm like, oh wow, that was a lot of trauma bonding. Because I feel like a lot of times retreats, like you get really close and you share a lot, and then afterwards you don't really talk about it anymore with each other. But then I think in the moment that was what was like beneficial for everyone, I guess. Like, I don't think there's a real consequence of trauma bond, like retreat bonding, kind of. Not necessarily trauma, but a lot of times it is like trauma bonding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think actually, in general, it like helps, like, it helps because it feels like you're just part of a community. Like, because, like, that you know, people like have like identified with your struggles, it like helps because, you know, it's like, oh, like, this is where, like, this is my community and people here can like relate to me.
I always just feel so, like, I don't know, connected and, like, refreshed after every retreat. Like, just feel like, even though maybe I don't, like, before retreat, like, I haven't really known about this person. But after retreat, like, especially in your own, like, discussion group, you just feel, like, closer to that person. And I feel like even though, like, maybe some friendship might not last as long as I wish to, or, like, we don't talk much anymore after retreat, we still, like, you know, when you see that person, you're just like, oh, yeah, I get you. And then it's nice to, like, feel that, too, because I've shared my experiences during retreat. And, like, when I see other people, they, like, I know that they understand me.
So you were both on eBoard.
Yeah.
How do you think that being on eBoard, like, changed? I guess the same question, like, how did it shape your Asian American identity? And also, like, how did it differ from, I mean, obviously it did differ, but, like, how did it differ from when you were a general member versus when you were on eBoard?
I think, like, Hantau for me was definitely much more extensive, like, leadership experience. So I've, like, done, like, other, like, leadership roles in the past, but I think Hantau is, like, probably, like, one of the most involved positions you can be in. Kind of go back to your question, I feel like it's, like, different because you have to, like, be responsible for everything. Like, I remember, like, during GMs, if something goes wrong, you're the one that kind of has to be responsible for, like, fixing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in general, too, like, I remember in our year, especially summer, like, there was, like, a lot of initiatives we did, which I really appreciated. And I think because I, like, did those initiatives, like, we did, like a lot of different fundraisers. Like, one of them was for, like, a community organization in Chinatown. I think I felt, like, much more connected to, like, my, like, broader identity as a Chinese American in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys feel like there was a lot of pressure on you to, like, I don't know, pressure in general from, like, other Asian Americans, like, within LMU?
Not necessarily, like, pressure from other Asian Americans. I feel like, especially for me, like, a lot of the times when I get pressure is usually from myself. Like, I give a lot of pressure on myself, but then when I, like, tell other people that, like, I'm really stressed, they'll be like, no, you're doing fine. But in my head, I'm not doing fine. You know, I think usually those pressure are, like, from myself. And I think that's all because, like, I think when you're a general member, you can, like, really fully enjoy the experience that eBoard provide for you and, like, be fully immersed in the experience without having to worry about, oh, hey, what's the next step in this activity? What do I need to do next, you know? But then when you're on eBoard, you're always thinking about, like, the logistic of the activity in the back of your mind. So, like, you can't really, like, fully 100% enjoy the experience, I feel like. But at the same time, I think it's very rewarding to know that, like, we're creating this experience for other people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like what Kevin said, like, in our year, I think our eBoard initiated a lot of things that are new because everything is online and we have to adapt. And I feel like knowing that, like, these practices might be useful for future generations of, like, Hantau members, I think that's also a very rewarding feeling. Like, yesterday, we were just talking to, like, Rogers, which is a senior who graduated in our freshman year. But then a lot of, like, the documents that he made, a lot of, like, the poster that he made, we still use some of it until now. You know, and just I feel like looking at the impact that you can make is what make being on eBoard very rewarding. And it also connect me to, like, my Asian American identity more because I know I'm contributing to, like, the community. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like, after GM, after a good GM, like, you just, like, feel so satisfied because you're like, oh, like, it like, everything worked, you know, and I think, and, like, you're just, like, satisfied and, like, finding, like, a really enjoyable space for everyone.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people looked up to you guys, too, because I definitely looked up to eBoard members when I was a freshman. So I'm sure you guys did a great
Kevin
job.
Kevin is the boba daddy.
Especially online.
The boba daddy that everyone looked up to.
I feel like you need to get some more context this summer. Like, I guess, like, boba
daddy. Do you buy everyone boba?
Because, like, you know, like, bakes, they buy their, like, littles, like, boba and stuff on, like, outings. So, like, the joke is, like, oh, that's a boba daddy.
Oh, yeah. So you just buy everyone boba?
Well, I don't buy everyone boba, but, like, it's like a joke, oh, as a bake, you, like, buy your littles boba, therefore a boba daddy.
Oh. Oh, my God. That's a new term. But, yeah, what did you struggle with the most with, like, cultural clubs? Because I feel like as you get older, there's more criticisms towards, like, clubs. And I've definitely had my fair share of criticisms of any club I've been in, any eBoard I've been on, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, whatever you're comfortable sharing, whatever tea.
Not
tea. It doesn't have to be tea. Constructive criticism.
Like, I have, like, you know, like, other Asian friends that from LMU that, like, are not, like, you know, in any of the, like, the API cultural clubs. And, like, I guess, like a lot of them, they, like, do go to these kind of clubs, right? Like, you know, a lot of them will, like, go to, like, like Han Tao, like any other clubs, but a lot of them like don't come back. And just that's just because like they feel the vibe is off. I feel like a lot of culture clubs, they attract people that are much more like social and like sociable, mm-hmm. which is not a bad thing, obviously. You know, it's always fun to have a very sociable club, but
yeah,
I feel like sometimes, like I know like one person I know, he said like one reason he didn't join like Han Tao was because he wasn't like that kind of Asian, basically, mm-hmm. as in like not as sociable. And I feel like people in general in Han Tao are like more connected to their culture, but like that's like not mm-hmm. the case for like all Asians. Like a lot of Asians, like me, are kind of whitewashed. So like a lot of times we don't have like a good sense of our culture sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so like honestly, like I have no idea like how clubs could be changed. Like you know, I don't accommodate them, but like that's just kind of my thoughts about it, I guess.
Yeah, that's a hard.
Yeah, it's like hard because like. It's like I just like don't know like how that situation could be changed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think my thoughts are very similar to what Kevin said, because I think especially you know like out the Chinese American club Han Tao has grown so much throughout like the past 3 to 4 years, and it's inevitable that like as the club grows bigger, there are gonna be cliques within the clubs. And I feel like a lot of times, if you're not already in the cliques at the beginning of the semester, like if you didn't join in the fall semester, it's really difficult to get into like the cliques mm-hmm. in the spring semester, or even like you join like later on in your college career. I think that's really difficult. And I think like also, obviously, like I think each club also has its own culture. And a lot of the times, like, you know, like what Kevin said, like some people just feel like, you know, they don't really vibe with like the culture of this club. Yeah, but I think like, honestly, I do feel like these things are very inevitable. But like as eBoard, what we can do is try to make people feel as welcome as possible and try to give more opportunities for people to mingle as much as possible. Like in our senior year, we did like whatever after GM, we'll have like a virtual hangout space. You know, like everyone is welcome. And if we see like, I remember like if we see anyone who's new to the general meeting, like we'll be like texting in our eBoard group chat and be like, oh wait, there's this new person, like we should try to like talk to him or something to make him feel like mm-hmm. included in the club. So I think that's like what eBoard should like focus on doing to avoid like creating that many cliques. And another thing about cultural clubs, I feel like because like I'm very much involved in like Han Tao, and like the connection that I built in Han Tao is so strong that I often like compare my relationship in Han Tao to other organizations that I'm in, even though I know that like I should not do that because I know it's different. But at the same time, like I feel like when I'm in other clubs, like my service org, I'm always just like longing for like the same connection that I have with people in Han Tao. But essentially, mm-hmm. it's still like not the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my thought. What about you? You've been on eBoard too, you know, you were in NSU.
Yeah, I guess like freshman year when I was really involved, or sophomore year when I was like super involved.
Yeah.
With everything.
Yeah.
I think at the time I just wanted something to be like in charge of, like some sort of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to me at the time, like cultural clubs were also interchangeable, like sadly. Like, I feel like it wasn't, like, when I joined, it wasn't as distinct.
Mm, yeah.
I don't think there was as much cultural knowledge or cultural discussions as there are now. And I feel like it was all the same people. So, to me,
yeah, same. They were all, true, like, true.
The same to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So, I really depended, like, what cultural clubs I went to, it really depended on what people were there. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I felt really comfortable in NSU. I felt really comfortable in Han Tao kind of thing. So, like, that was what was the most important thing to me. And I don't know if that was because, like, I was already very in tune with, like, my Chinese identity. And, like, a lot of cultural, like, holidays and stuff where, like, people that people might not know growing up here, like, I grew up with. So, mm-hmm. I feel like maybe that was why the people part was more important to me. And then as like the e-boards changed and as more people came in, I think more people that I was friends with were in Hontao. So like I slowly stopped going to the other cultural clubs. So I think for me, it really is like the people.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think. So long ago.
No worries.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what other like things. Oh, I was going to ask you guys though, like, do you think that these cultural clubs are a good representation of like those cultures? Because I like, at least when I don't know how your e-board like did things. It seemed like you guys were doing a lot of educational stuff from what I saw from Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
But like in the first few years, if you guys remember, there were some educational things, but I feel like it was just very mainly focused on the social aspect, which is fair. Like, that is what cultural clubs should be there for, like, find community too. And like, yeah, we're getting food and we're, I don't know what else we did at the time. Like, I think the only time we really talked about like our identity and like being Chinese or Asian American was during retreat. And yeah, retreat only comes around like once a year kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at the time I didn't really care because all I wanted was to find community. And so like Hontao really gave me that. So I was grateful for that. But like, do you think that these clubs are doing like, how do you balance that?
Yeah.
And do you think it is a good like representation of?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Like, I think like a common criticism you hear about like culture clubs is that they're like kind of surface level. Obviously, they find a very good venue for like socialization. Sometimes they kind of like lack in like culture or like, I guess, like social justice. And like, for the first 3 years, especially as like a general member, I kind of just like accepted that. And then obviously, you know, like, it's still like a lot of fun, you know, socializing and in Hontao is still a blast. But I think in our last year, actually, we definitely had more of a focus on like culture and social justice because like, especially online, right? Because like when you're online, I mean, you can have like different hangouts like on like Wonderme or Zoom, but obviously they're not quite the same, right? As like being in person. And so I feel like we did like obviously like to like, you know, have like content for members to come. I think like one thing, and also because it's like good, right? We like had more focus on like, you know, having more extensive like cultural corners, right? Or like even more like longer talks or like reflections or like fundraisers on like social justice. And I think that's a really positive change too, because I think especially in person, I think, you know, you can have fun, right? You can obviously do a lot of socialization, but like also like learn about culture and, you know, work and advocate for issues in the world too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember like when I first joined NSU e-board, which is like the Japanese American club, we didn't say. And I'm not Japanese, but I feel like I was pushing for more social justice things or like more culture things because there wasn't. There definitely was lacking in that. But I don't think it ever went through with people who were older than me who were on e-board. And so I think that's also why I was, like, left or didn't go back.
Yeah. No, I think so. Like, when in my sophomore year, you know, I was the cultural coordinator of Hontao too. And at the time, I remember my speech was, like, I want to push for more social justice. But I think it was less, like, people are less passionate about it back then. You know, like, we stick to a lot of, like, we still have educational stuff, but it's almost always just talking about, like, very, like, old like Chinese history and like festival that we don't really connect with nowadays. We might not be very connected with nowadays. But what I'm very happy about like last year with our executive board is like I think the younger generation, they are more passionate about social justice.
Oh, definitely. Especially
for the people that are on our e-board, they are like everyone is on board to like push for more social justice discussion. And I feel like also because of last year, we have George Floyd. And, you know, like everyone has this like awakening, you know, I need to care more. And I think because of that, we also were able to like push for more social justice thing. And people are very like, what's the word, receptive about it. Like they're happy to learn more. And I think it's like, you know, like it's a two-way thing. You know, when people on e-board, they want to push for it. And then we also receive very positive feedback from like general members. And that's how we know like we should do more of this. And yeah, so I think there's like a very like good momentum going into like the younger generation to learn more about social justice.
Yeah, I feel so old when I say that. Oh, like the younger generation. But honestly, it's true though. Like, I feel like even people that are like a few years younger than ourselves, they're like really passionate about social justice. I really like.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that like it's the younger generation is getting more passionate, because I definitely was not. When I was younger. That's cool to hear. I'm sure you guys left the club in good hands.
Yeah, I'm very happy. I'm sure like the next E4 will do fine.
Aw. But okay. Moving on. I just thought of this question, Kevin, when I was listening to you talk about you growing up in Sacramento. And do you still keep in contact with like your friends from high school and stuff? I don't know if you guys still are in contact. Actually, okay, let me give some backstory of why I wanted to ask this question. I actually did a research interview for one of my friends' like projects, and she was researching on interracial relationships, and she asked me a question. She was like, how do you navigate your relationship with your partner in the light of like the rhetoric surrounding like white people in America? And so that made me think. So I just want to ask you this question of like, how is it reconnecting with like old friends from home, like after college or having grown in college, and in light of like everything that's been going on? Because I honestly did not know how to answer this question. It like, I like paused for so long. I was like, oh, what? But I don't know if you guys have any like insight about that, and especially since you grew up in such a majority white area too.
Yeah, so like I think like half my friends like back home are Asian, but I think the other half are kind of like not. Like one of my good friends, he's actually he's Greek. Yeah, like he's born in the U.S. but like his family are like all like Greek immigrants. So I guess like yeah, I think with like a lot of my friends, I'm like I'm so pretty connected with them. But obviously, not all of them. Like some, I've like kind of fallen off with like some of my high school friends. But some of my other friends, I'm still like in pretty good contact with. Especially because like a lot of my good friends went to UCLA, so it was like pretty convenient, you know, just to, like go over there real fast, or like a weekend, or, like a dinner or something, just to hang out or parties. Some of my friends would throw parties at UCLA, and since I knew them, I knew the party throwers. It was pretty easy for me to get in. I guess like. Honestly, going back to your question, at least for me, like I talk like differently with people. Like, I feel like depending on like which like friend group I'm with, I like talk about different things or like talk differently. Because I feel like with like Asians, it's like much easier to like bring up like a certain like relatable like experience of our culture, or so I feel like if like complain about our parents, right? I feel like other Asians like all get it, right? But obviously like with like my friends that are like not Asian, like I still like enjoy being with them, especially because like once in high school, like when you talk to them, like you know, you just feel like honestly sometimes like more comfortable because you've like known them for so long. So sometimes I like just like enjoy, you know, talking, and like I feel like my friends from back home, I feel like I have a much more dirtier mouth. That makes sense. Yeah. So I still, even though like you know, like some things are like harder to like relate to with like my friends that are not Asian, I still really enjoy being with them.
Do you have, like, social justice-y conversations with them?
Oh, no, not really. Like, especially, like, growing up here, like, I didn't even know what the term social justice was, like, before coming to college. Yeah, I just feel like, in general, like, I don't really talk about those kind of issues with friends back home.
It's a different dynamic. It's hard. Yeah, I just want to ask you this question because I, like, took a lot of time to reflect on it, and I think it's hard when systemically white men are so trash. But for me, I was saying how like personally on an individual level, I have white friends and my partner is white. And so it's like on a personal micro level to me, I know that they're genuine people and they're just grew up maybe in like white privilege. So they don't like, it's hard to recognize. And I think for me, because I had a lot of privilege, like growing up in a majority Asian area too, like Hong Kong, and like not recognizing race and like having negative stereotypes too on other minorities in Hong Kong, like people from Pakistan or like people from like the Philippines and stuff like that. So I have more empathy with white people who are not aware maybe, but then like I it's hard to bring up these conversations, I feel like sometimes with them, because there's a obvious systemic dynamic of like hierarchy in the US. But I know that these people are genuine, or else I wouldn't be friends with them, I feel like. But then systemically, that's where I struggle. I'm like, I don't know how to feel about this systemically, since like these people who are close to me are systemically oppressive and systemically have power. I don't know. It's just a really interesting,
I think, like,
question.
Like, I got this concept from like a TikTok that I watched too. It was like this like white woman who was like complaining about like men privilege, and then she was asking like her husband like what he thinks about it, and then he was like very understandably saying that, oh, I know that like you're talking about the system, like when you're complaining about men, you're talking about like the system, but not like me individually. And I think that's a very like applicable to like how, you know, like when I talk shit about like white people, which is like all the time, doesn't mean that like I hate all the white people, you know, but I'm like speaking up about it like from a systemic standpoint, not saying that all the white people are bad people, because I'm sure there are a lot of like
exactly
people. And I think that's the thing that we need to learn too, because I feel like a lot of the rhetorics we have about like, I know, white people too, or even like other minority groups, is very like dehumanizing. And I feel like we need to like recognize like, yes, like there are all these like stereotypes about them, but like eventually they're still human.
Yeah, it's like how to balance talking from a systemic point of view versus like a personal point of view, because it's like sometimes if you talk too personal, it's like I don't want to make excuses for them if they are problematic, but you can't also like only talk from like a systemic point of view. So it's an interesting balance, but yeah. Well, it's been an hour. We have one last question for you, Kevin. So obviously you struggled with your Asian American identity growing up. What advice would you give to people who are also struggling to connect with their own, not necessarily Asian American identity, but like whatever identity they, whatever cultural background they come from?
Oh, this is a tough question. Because like, honestly, like for me, I feel like there wasn't like any like specific advice I was ever given. Because like for me, at least, it was like definitely like a process. Like, because I feel like if I had stayed in my hometown, I wouldn't have really ever like advanced in my understanding of like being Asian. Definitely, like for me at least, it was like the people I like interacted with and got to know better that changed my views. Because like in general, like staying in Rockland, the environment is very different than what you would expect in like LA. But I guess like if I was to give like more specific advice, it'd just be like kind of to like unpack your feelings in a way. Honestly, like it's like kind of like therapy, I feel like. I'm not sure who exactly would be qualified to give this, like, kind of unpacking process. But kind of like, ask yourself, I don't know, like, why do you feel this way? And, like, how, like, might your environment, like, affect you? Because, like, for a lot of people, it's, like, very, like, subconscious. Like, you know, feelings of, like, you know, guilt or, like, self-hatred towards themselves.
Mm. How about specifically, like, once you get to college? Because it's hard, right? If you don't, like, leave your hometown, it's, like, hard for you to realize these new things.
Yeah, honestly, I think like college in general, like, I mean, one thing I was like thinking about, like just like reflecting about my experience in college, is like college, like honestly, college costs a lot, but like a lot of like the value you get at college is like hard to quantify monetarily. Like a lot of it is like your connections you make, and like also like the resources you get at college, because college like has like a lot of resources you can use. I just feel like, like one thing that's like nice is like classes, because I actually took a class on African American studies, and even though, you know, it wasn't for my major, it was like a gen ed class, it actually was like really like eye-opening for me, because like one thing we like talked about in class was like racism, obviously. And before I thought, oh, like racism is just because like people are like ignorant about certain beliefs, like other people. But kind of that class, I learned that like racism was like a product of like much more like ingrained things, like economic or like political factors. Just like hearing that, honestly, like really like literally like broadened my understanding of kind of like America and race in general. So I feel like kind of like resources like that were like really formative for me in like explaining my Asian American identity.
I'm glad that our school makes us take those classes.
Honestly, like before I like came to LMU, I was kind of the opinion, like, oh, like, these classes are kind of useless. Like, I don't really need them, you know? I'm just here for my chemistry classes. But honestly, like, I kind of enjoy them, even though, you know, I am a STEM person.
You're really good at writing, Kevin. Yeah, Kevin helped me proofread my essays.
Aww. I always find that funny. Like, even though I'm STEM, I'm kind of bad at math. Like, I'm much better at, like, writing than math.
Yes. No boxes here. There is a spectrum. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, with that, our episode has come to an end.
Yeet. It's a pleasure to be on.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
Share your social media with us.
My Instagram is kevin.s.chang. I don't post that often. Okay, go follow
Kevin.
Well, if anyone often, has, like, the same experience as you, they can
definitely
reach out to you and just talk
about it. Like, maybe you get to, like, connect with another, like, Asian dude in Rockland who has, like, similar Asian experience.
You can honestly build a whole community. You can build a whole community of Asians.
Not your typical Kevin Nguyen. Call it that.
Like a Hantau Rockland version.
Yes. That'd be pretty cool.
Awesome.
Cool. Also follow us on social media and TikTok. We have more followers on TikTok than our Instagram.
I know. Yes. Okay, cool. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Thanks to Kevin.
Thank you.
Outro music.